Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We're in the studio, and we have on the right, back after being gone for a little while, Dan McKay.
He's alive.
Nice to see you,
Much
Senator.
Much to the liberals of Salt Lake City's chagrin, he's here.
He's here. And on the left, so happy to have Josh Cantor join us once again. Josh, you're with the Alliance for a Better Utah. Are you chairman? I can't remember your title with that.
Yep, founder and board chair.
Okay,
thanks
I love it.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, always nice to have you. You always bring a lot of common sense and sometimes some really liberal attitudes to the show.
Thank you for throwing. Even the Tribune now calls Alliance for a Leftist Better Utah a left-leaning organization, which, like, you know, the Leaning Tower of Pisa is leaning. I would say there's more than just lean, Josh, but I love you.
In fairness, the Tribune has always called us the left-leaning Alliance for Better Utah.
You know what I think is interesting, though, is these days these ideological titles, they just don't mean a whole lot to me. I mean, I am a big proponent of free trade. I can't stand some of these, you know, tariffs and trade wars. And it used to be like the bastion of conservatism that you wouldn't, you know, succumb to the temptations of tariffs and things like that. And now, you know, my party's fully in. So I think it's crazy. So I don't know what left-leaning means these days, Dan, because I don't know what right-leaning means.
Yeah, I don't either. One-legged people, I guess.
We could have a good conversation about it, but let's...
And bore everyone.
Well, yeah. Let's talk about what our president did, President Trump, in the last several days.
What are the liberals totally distracted by today, Natalie? That's what we should start the
show
with.
It's the Twitter account again.
Twitter? The liberals are distracted by Twitter, Josh?
It's shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, my mind is blown.
Okay, so you're being on the offense here, and you're saying our president tweets these things about these four female women of color in Congress, and it's interpreted as racist. And you're saying, Dan, that he does it as a distraction. A distraction from...
Well, I think at the end of the day, it is to keep the liberals biting on something else so that they, what I believe will end up happening is President Trump is baiting the liberals to nominate a super progressive, ultra left Democratic candidate based on all these issues that he keeps percolating to the front. So at the end of the day, middle America is going to look at that and say, I want nothing to do with that. Because I guarantee a super left candidate is not going to win Michigan.
Josh, can't wait to hear your response to that.
Well, I can't disagree with Dan, but I think, you know, my reaction to this whole tweet storm and the comments that Trump was being racist for a change is really should start before that. It's not why, you know, even whether the question is whether his tweets were racist, it's really, to me, why isn't the first question? And I don't disagree with Dan about the distraction, but at the same time, this raises a conversation that should be happening, which is, why is the leader of the free world who, you know, if anybody won the birthing lottery, it's Donald Trump, right? Mm-hmm, I mean, he was literally born with a golden spoon in his mouth, not even silver, right? This is gold plated. And why isn't he saying something along the lines of, I don't agree with a thing these four women say, I don't agree with their policies, but look, as first and second generation Americans, what they've accomplished. They are the epitome of the American dream. Mm-hmm. You don't have to agree with their policy. I don't agree with a lot of their policy positions. But look at what they've achieved. And instead of that, he's tearing them down. And I just personally think it's awful.
Yeah.
Okay, but fair. And I think that's actually would have been a better thing to say, right? But that's not our president. He just doesn't say it the way we all think he should say it. That said, you have four congresspeople who are constantly running around and talking about how bad America is, comparing things going on in America to the Holocaust, and constantly calling the president a Nazi, right? You can't have that kind of diatribe on one side, and then you get a response saying, if you don't like it, leave, then calling him a racist. Like, the thing just, it just boggles my mind. I don't understand how these four women could be so unhappy to be in America.
Dan,
I really don't.
Dan, I feel like it's the mantle of our chief elected officer, you know, the CEO of our country, the leader of the free world, whatever you want to call him, to set a higher bar of leadership, despite something going on in Congress and whatnot. So when I've worked in executive branch roles, we were taught a term, continually productive. That it is the expectation of this office that despite the political firestorms and things that come your way, we will always be continually productive. Anyway, that is a far cry from what you see happening in the White House.
And that was a message brought to you by Idealistic Natalie. whom I totally love and appreciate. I take nothing away
from it. I lived it because I would watch something unfair happen. This would be, you know, in the Levitt administration, but I would watch something unfair happen that was untrue, not correct, you know, whatever you want to say.
Sure.
And you go in the back rooms and you're just, and then you just realize we're honored to be in these seats and we've got to set a high bar of leadership. And anyway, that's how I was mentored.
And I think most of America is going to look at it and say, we've got a strong economy that continues to outperform the rest of the country. And we are starting to see, you know, the rise of the attitude of American exceptionalism again, which is, you know, you may not like it. You may think there's, you know, all these horrible things going on the border, which, you know, we could all do better on all of these issues. But America is still far better than all other countries in how we're treating people and trying to bring the next generation up. And this idea that, you know, things have never been worse and things, I just don't buy it.
Yeah.
I don't. And I don't think in 2020, if the Democrats are walking around talking about how horrible America is again, America's not going to buy it either. We don't want to hear it.
Yeah. Josh, any quick comments there? And I'm thinking about your kids, by the way, because I'm thinking about my own and how they view this kind of behavior.
You know, my kids and other people. And I think the problem with the way you're looking at this, Dan, is that, you know, people do listen to Trump and they do think, you know, he is characterizing the entire Democratic Party or even just these four people, it doesn't even matter, as though they hate America, which they have never said, which is not true. They have a different belief about certain policies. You may not like how they express it. I may not like how they express it. But the fact is, they've made it to Congress. They have the right to express their views and to debate policy issues. And that's what they're trying to do.
And, Dan,
and
even,
he started the name calling, not them.
Even our, you know, Representative
Bishop.
Come on,
we're not to a he started it argument, are we?
I'm not saying that, but you know, again, to Natalie's point, this is the chief executive of the United States of America. It is a fabulous country. He's gotten every advantage possible. And now he's criticizing these four women who have worked their way from nothing to be where they are.
But at the same time, you're going to hear next year how America's never been worse off. And that is the presidential debate.
Let's come back and have that conversation when somebody utters those words, because I think that's not been uttered and it's not going to be uttered.
Guys, let's talk about the Utah congressional delegation. So we have Ben McAdams, who voted in support of the non-binding resolution that condemned the president. You have Representative Bishop, Stuart Curtis, doing their own statement, kind of taking on this inflammatory rhetoric on both sides and kind of trying to find the middle ground. And then you have Senator Romney, who took his own, I'll quote, he said, "The president's comments were destructive, demeaning, and disunifying." Interesting.
But that's consistent with your point, right?
Well, you think our congressional delegation did a good job on this? I mean, Josh, I'm looking at you.
I think Romney's statement, his second round of statement, which I believe is what that comes from, first round was a little bit more tepid. Uh-huh. I think his second round was obviously a little bit stronger. I think McAdams is where he ought to be. And I think the other three kind of chickened out and took this... You know, not this time. I mean, where were they saying this kind of rhetoric has to stop when Hatch was calling Democrats dumbass or this or that or whatever? I mean, and certainly with how extreme this particular tweet storm was, I don't believe this is the time that those three should be quiet.
It's been a tough one.
Hatch said dumbass?
He called Democrats dumbasses. Mm.
Well, long memory.
I do agree with him on something.
Dan,
I'm totally kidding.
Quick comment for you. let's just transition just a little bit to a House panel that just in recent news has held the Attorney General, William Barr, and the Commerce Secretary, William Ross, in contempt of Congress for not providing documents and the like, all on the citizenship question. So this is the 2020 census.
Yeah.
You know, you've been gone when we've talked a little bit about the citizenship question, but I'm as a census devotee, I'm really disappointed.
Yeah.
Like, this is something that should be unifying for our country.
Yeah.
When we look inward and enumerate, count everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And here we've got this
and
divisive
we've already discussed
issue.
How much easier it is from a survey, you know, to get better information on citizenship and some of those things. So I take nothing away from that. I don't know that the census has ever been a unifying factor. I don't know. Maybe. But I've looked at how this is progressing politically. And, you know, again, the Democrats are drawing the line in the wrong direction. I mean, I don't know that there is anyone in the country who is out there preaching open borders, everybody come in. Poverty should be a criteria for asylum. I don't think you see that in the middle heart of America, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you go take the pulse of where America is, and I don't see that, right? That said, you've got Democrats who are going to make that a 2020 issue for president about open borders and, you know, allow everybody in from an asylum standpoint. And I'm telling you, my belief is the Dems are going to miss on that point. Exactly.
I don't know how you want to knit that together with the citizenship question,
Josh.
Because
most of the blue-collar Democrats are competing for jobs, right? And so they're standing out
there. I don't disagree with that, but nobody – again, Dan, I mean, what candidate has said they're in favor of open borders? That is a false narrative.
Don't make me rewind the Democratic debate.
Okay.
That thing was a train wreck. And it was just highlighting. It was free college education for everybody, open borders for everybody. It was just – you go down the list of the
farthest extremes. Okay, we'll come back to that, but I'll answer Natalie's question and just say that I think that the citizenship question, you know, nobody on the president's team or in Congress has been honest about this, and I think the contempt – you know, it'll go nowhere, but the contempt charge is worthwhile and is the appropriate message to send that you don't come and lie to Congress.
Yeah.
If this we keep coming back to subjects, you keep putting pins in things we have to come back to. Does that mean we have to have Josh back on the show?
Maybe.
I'll just say that I appreciate the lively conversation. I hope our listeners, too. I'm with Dan McCain, Josh Cantor, Natalie Gochner. We're going to take a quick break.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay just barely to the right of Josh Cantor.
Josh Cantor just barely to the left of Dan McKay.
Natalie Gochner solidly in the political middle, and you're listening
really
to both sides of the aisle.
Apparently.
We are, our capital city, loves Salt Lake City, has a, you know, an open mayoral race. It's it is game time. They have faced off now in two major debates. Josh, your entity, Alliance for Better Utah, hosted one of these.
Yep, we hosted one along with KCPW, the John R. Park Debate Society over at the University of Utah.
And then we just had the one this week that was with the KSL. I just know that Doug Wright moderated it. Really interesting. So candidates Luz Escamilla, Jim DeBacchus, David Garbett, Aaron Mendenhall, Stan Penfold, David Ibarra, Rainier Huck, and Richard Goldberger face off. It was interesting to watch. Dan, what were your quick reactions to what you're seeing in the capital city here?
Well, obviously, to me, the clear front runners, I think in polish and everything else, I felt Luz Escamilla and Jim DeBacchus, our former co-host.
Uh-huh.
I thought they stood out as far as, you know, strength of position. But I was in those debates, I'm always looking for a little bit like I'm trying to figure out who's been missing something or is underappreciated, and they do something and they shine a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally thought in the first debate, I thought David Garbett stood out a little bit.
Smart, articulate.
Smart, stood out. And he had a logical thing. And they also did some soft punching, right? So, you know, you had those talking about how, you know, we don't need former legislators. What we need are, and, you know, we need community activists like mm-hmm. David Ibarra would said, or we need somebody with business experience and background to help run the city like David was saying. And so you kind of hear those soft punching, and I kept hearing over and over that everyone in the field is acknowledging that Jim and Luz probably have a lead, it seems.
Interesting.
And that where everybody else is going to land in the primary is going to be interesting. Do you see anybody, Josh, like rising, you know, quickly to take on those two?
I don't know the answer to that, and I want to be a little careful of what I
say
because we were a debate host
spot,
and we're
yeah.
in a tough spot. But I do think, you know, my personal opinion in terms of your question was I thought Aaron came off very strongly in our debate.
Yeah.
I think there's some strong candidates out there. You know, there's a lot of stuff being thrown back and forth. There's a lot of positions, obviously, that are similar. I think one of the things that's interesting about these debates is getting the sense of who has the real presence to be mayor and what do people think about that.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting. I think it's great that there are this many forums for these guys to talk about, even though it's still kind of hard to distinguish. One of the funny things, we ran a poll, and Jim, as everybody probably knows, came out, you know, very, very far ahead of everybody else. And then everyone else was essentially in a statistical tie for second. So the number of emails that came out then saying, we're number two in the poll, was actually kind of funny.
That is
but,
funny.
It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out in primaries coming up.
It is a complete jungle how these elections work, because usually you have someone who, usually it's the incumbent, but in this case it's going to be Jim DeBacchus because of his network and whatnot. Pops out, but then it's just a jungle for who that second place is.
Yeah.
And it's only the two, obviously, that face off. I want to offer a couple of perspectives, and this is getting a little bit political, a little bit out of my area of expertise, but I'm really interested in how the Salt Lake East Side approaches this, and I'm going east, like above Foothill.
Ooh, the Parleys area.
Yes, and the reason St. Mary's. The reason I'm doing that is I just remember from prior elections, it was always a big deal about the female, I'm going to say Republican or, you know, right of center voter turnout, and a lot of them don't show up.
Yeah.
Anyway, this will all come down to who shows up on election day. I bring that up because Erin Mendenhall is turning some heads.
Yeah.
And I would guess that she's turning heads of people like me.
Yeah.
That are, right of center Republican women who are seeing the way she holds herself, how well she understands the issues.
Yeah.
And so I'm just seeing that dynamic. Now, as I say that, Stan Penfold knows the issues, has been a city council chair, and we've already know a lot of good things about Luz and Jim. David is the business guy. David Abair is the business guy.
I'll say, I mean, of all of those, if I was going to just see, I don't have to be careful, right? I can be completely negligent.
Mm-hmm.
You're leading, you're going to be moderating a debate.
Well,
so
I'm
you have
friends
to be
with
careful.
All these people.
You're handling these debates, so
you're
you
friends
got that.
With a couple of them, but not all of them.
I don't like any of them.
Okay, I consider all of them friends, except for I do not know Rainier Huck and Richard Goldberger.
Yeah,
but the other ones I know all of them and feel a close friendship with.
Yeah, I could. And the nice thing about this race is I can look through the list and I could say, there are legitimately five people in the race that I think would do a good job as an executive.
Totally agree.
For
you
Salt
just
Lake
cut
City.
One of six out. Who'd you cut out?
Well, and that is the hardest
He's
part.
He's not going to say maybe.
No, I am. I'm going to say that.
Oh, you don't have to if you don't want to, Dan.
No, I'm, tr- yeah,
oh,
I'm trying
on.
To think. Yeah, I know, right? I will say I agree that Erin Mendenhall is a dark horse in the sense that she could be underappreciated, and in that statistical tie, she could edge out if the ladies of the Far East Side show up.
I just brought it up as an idea.
Whatever else happens,
and
she's got a future in politics.
Yeah, she is a good executive.
Totally agree. And David Garbette could be a dark horse as well because he's got an issue that really resonates with people, and he's being very active. I'm just doing the whole air quality environmental. His background as an attorney for the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. I don't know. Depending on who turns out, it might be a good
Josh
run.
Keeps wondering if I'm going to drop who gets dropped out. I'm going to leave it unsaid.
I was also curious whether you would make some comment about Sue Up, but.
No.
I'm happy to.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, okay, let's go
that's
to.
Like low-hanging fruit for the show.
We'll just agree that August 13th is the primary election. It's going to be a big day, and we'll keep talking about it each week because the plot is thickening. I have the opportunity to moderate a debate that the Sierra Club is hosting, and so, I mean, I'm just going to be honest with the debate. These are a lot of my friends, but let's have a good policy discussion. Yeah. I don't know what else to do. Inland Port. We need to talk about it again, not from a standpoint of the policy.
No,
yeah.
That's going great.
I want to talk about the fallout since this protest, and I want to give it fair treatment, you guys. So it's sort of like, you're at the Salt Lake Chamber, you're an employee, you have a professional job to do, and all of a sudden it's estimated 100 people come into your office with masks on, chanting something negative about your CEO, and you don't know what's going to happen next. They're standing on the receptionist desk. There was some property damage. Someone urinated in an office. This is not...
Is that wrong? Should I not have done that?
I thought you were saying, is that the truth?
No,
that's my understanding.
And was that confirmed that it happened? Because I thought Derek Miller actually came out and said that there was very little property damage.
Very little. Very little. I think it was a security camera. But there was something. Anyway, along those lines, and maybe some more truth, but still the notion of totally scaring and coming into a private office and stomping on the receptionist desk and wearing masks and yelling at people, that is intimidating.
Okay, but I will say, look, I don't agree with the protests handled, right? I agree with protests. Like, you got a problem and that's the only way you can be heard? Okay, fine. Go for it, right? Mm-hmm. This is, I think, was a fault of the Inland Port, in my opinion, the board on the Inland Port. And I square the blame at them, at least for the fear involved in the professional employees. Holding public meetings on private property is probably a bad decision for a bunch of reasons. But one of the primary reasons is, it was, I think, and I'm just I haven't talked to anybody, so I'm just guessing. But I think the reason it was done that way is because they wanted to be able to take the protests down the street, right? Mm-hmm. And to shut it out. Now, you know, was that productive? Was it not? Honestly, probably not. But, you know, it gets back to the core of the problem, which is there is frustration about the inland port. There are a lot of people who don't understand what it is. And so they're, you know, they're getting excited emotionally, mm-hmm. and they're,
yeah.
And honestly, emotion and politics rarely blend well.
Yeah. I'm trying to do the fair treatment thing, Josh, and I was pretty direct in my criticism of how that intimidates a workforce that seems completely unfair to me. I want to give the fair treatment if you have something that you want to say that is...
Yeah, no, I think, first of all, I think we should write down this date because I want to first say I agree with everything that Dan just said. And, you know, I think it's really unfortunate the way, obviously, this came out. I certainly support the right to protest. I think the inland port has been handled badly from the beginning, and where, you know, blame for that lies is another discussion. Having said that, obviously this turning into, you know, some violence and some property damage and the perhaps the police were at fault for escalating it as well, it's obviously going to be hard to know that till that's investigated.
Yeah.
And certainly for those innocent kind of people at work who get caught in the middle of something like this, it's scary, as you said, and it's really unfortunate.
I feel like we can do better as a community, and that's incumbent on the decision makers, the people in power, the people who are leading to help get a reset, to work through this.
I would like to add, and I don't know that we're going to go off on this tangent, but I do think then, in reacting to it, Governor Herbert calling this essentially domestic terrorism was really overboard and uncalled for. And
I'm joining Josh. That was way
overstated. In my view, you know, 9/11 is terrorism. Oklahoma City is domestic terrorism. This is not domestic terrorism.
No.
This is a protest gone bad, but it is nothing more than a civil disobedience attempt at protest gone bad.
Maybe,
that's a long cry from domestic
terrorism. Maybe your opinion there has something to do with how close you are to the people that were impacted. Because, you know, maybe it's a little far-fetched. I mean, it's obviously not Oklahoma, but there was fear in people's eyes. And it's changed the behavior of how you access the Chamber of Commerce. You can't get to the sixth floor without a key code. That's a shame. You know, people were hurt.
Yeah. You know, I get that, right?
But they don't staff the inland port. It's not a public function of theirs.
So why was the meeting there?
Then don't.
There wasn't
the meeting
a meeting there. There wasn't a meeting there.
Well, and I would agree that the
there
protesters showing
there.
Up
they
at
just
the Chamber
showed
of Commerce instead of an inland port facility was a mistake on the protesters'
fair.
Front.
Yeah, that's fair.
They
I agree
just
with that.
Showed up.
Sorry, I thought.
I don't think that makes it terrorism, but it does make it a bad
judgment. Yeah, I understand.
The terrorism
going far, but I'm telling you, I never thought that I would go to a nonprofit like that and feel that kind of barrier to get access because of what they went through.
Have you been to the church office building lately?
That one's tough.
I was going to say, security, but it's getting...
Or Planned Parenthood.
But, I was going to say, security for these things are getting more strict everywhere.
It bothers me. Hey, we are almost out of town.
Have you tried to get into KCPW? I got to have somebody buzz me in.
There's a guard dog.
There's a guard dog right there at the front.
I don't feel like I'm not a moderator. I represent the political middle, but I feel like we need to talk about one more thing, and that's the UTA issue with the tracks, okay? An extension of the Draper tracks. So the way this works is the UTA took a step and they, they're going to award $1.2 billion in tracks extension dealing with the prison site and Lehigh. I think it's something that's way needed, but there were some commitments earlier from the UTA to invest additional money in bus service. And this is just, for me, I'm so excited to see Silicon Slope serviced by rail that I think this is the right way to go. Do you guys see it any differently?
Well, I thought, first of all, the announcement was only that they were
approving
the study, not the $1.2 billion. And, you know, my sense is that organizations like UTA obviously do studies decades in advance of when some of these projects really happen. So I don't know that that necessarily takes away
no
from
issue with
the
study. The
earlier commitments that they've made to improve bus service and things like that. You know, I think it seems like there needs to be a real analysis of what's the best way to service that community. And even what's the development that is ultimately going to be on that site and how does that need to be serviced.
So, Dan, some nice corrections there. Any other comments you'd make on the UTA and then we'll go to gripes?
Well, I will say, we're going to put $1.2 billion into tracks, which, you know, I understand that push. I just still don't see UTA making money. I don't see this being, you know, a system that is working thus far. So... You know, a and addition by subtraction is an interesting element for UTA, and I would, you know, I think they need to just think about that.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Either of you have a quick gripe? It needs to be a two-word gripe.
Yeah. Be careful taking out your contacts. You can break a blood vessel.
Dan's got a red. Josh, quick gripe.
Differences of opinion in Congress should be celebrated, not condemned.
My gripe, so it's near the 24th of July. It's a time when our state celebrates Pioneer Day. I'm looking for the unity that can come out of that. I would love to see the 24th of July committee allow Mormon buildings bridges in the 24th of July parade. I think that would be a real plus for our state, and that's something I'm looking for. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, been joined by Josh Cantor and Dan McKay. Program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.